Coming up next, one of my good friends in the industry, a guy that I grew up reading, and then I got to be friends with him. Now I'm a panelist on Around the Horn with him. And the other day, he put out this column that just stopped me in my tracks when I saw the tweet and the column, and then I read it. Bill Plaschke, lead columnist of the LA Times, contracted the coronavirus just a couple of weeks ago, and he had been safe. He kind of has some idea of how he got it, although you never know. But Bill, what was your experience like with this?
Hey, what's going on, you guys? I'm a little down right now. I went to the doctor today. Quarantine was supposed to end today, and the doc gave me the blood test and said, nope, you still got it. Go back home.
Oh, man.
It's been 2 weeks now. The whole thing is just unbelievable. I mean, the reason, and I didn't want to write about something so personal and so vulnerable.
Yeah.
I just felt like we had all in the sports world, especially all of us.
Yeah.
We write forever. We take sides. We say they should play football. They should play baseball. Or they shouldn't play football or baseball. And the underlying thing is, how dangerous is this? Is it really a thing?
Mm.
Is it overrated? Is it overworked? And I'm telling you now, and you've heard this from others, but I'm living proof. Thank God I'm still living to prove that it's real. And it sucks.
Mm.
And it's real. And that's kind of what I want to write the story is that I just wanted to, if one thing, if I'm going to, as my columns go on the rest of the summer, they're all going to be framed from this. I mean, I'm writing that the NFL shouldn't come back because, they say, well, only the small percentage test, but the people who get it, you get it and it stays with you. And it's like the horrifying thing. And everybody's always heard about the sweats, and I sweated through 5 shirts one night. My teeth, I got to chill so bad. I thought I was going to chip a tooth. I got hallucinations. I couldn't
taste.
I couldn't smell. But the thing about the thing overriding all that is that it's just the fear. It's once that doctor tells you, you got it, I say, okay, so what can I take for it? Nothing. What do I do if I'm sick? Go to the hospital. Is there anything you can do for me? No. Then you're scared. You're pretty much scared for your life for the rest of the time you have it. And it's like, and you're also alone. People forget you're quarantined, so everybody's out of my house. So I'm alone in my house for 2 weeks, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sweating through my pillow, and I'm coughing up a storm, and my blood oxygen level is going down. And I'm thinking, do I go to the hospital? Because if I go to the hospital, I may not get out. Do I call a friend or a family member? No, because nobody can get near you. So what do you do? And you go through this every day with this thing, because it's like the first thing. We're all used to, I think, in life, having stuff where your car breaks down, you can fix it. Your air conditioning breaks, you can get it fixed.
Yeah.
We can fix ourselves. You can't fix this. So you're just to pull at the mercy of your prayers in this. And so that's what's so scary about it. And I think that's what people seem to forget. And I know people, we're all in two camps. It's like, okay, you take it too seriously and you're being too careful and you're a real wimp, or you're being judgy and you're not careful enough. And I just think you can't be careful. And I just think, this thing is alive and real. And if I can get it, and I never went out anywhere. I haven't been inside my church in 5 months. I didn't go shopping for 4 months. And yet I went out to a couple of outdoor dinners with masks and everything. But you realize, too, even though you can sit in a parking lot or a they say take your mask. They say, oh, but you can take your mask off once we sit at the table. Well, that's insane because I did that, and so I'm sitting without my mask for 2 hours, two nights in a row, like a couple weekends ago, and I'm sure that's where I got it. And it's so easy.
Reaction when you first either got the phone call or you saw that positive test. And I bring that up because of on Hard Knocks this week, Anthony Lynn, he revealed, the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, he revealed, hey, I had it. And when I got it, he felt as if like an outcast. So when you first heard the news, how did you take that, Bill?
I think we're going to get Bill back on. His phone might have dropped out. But I think, having read his story, one of the things that got me was just he had been so careful. And I feel like I've been so careful, and there's all these moments where we're all, you know, there's some of us get a little brave, you know, you just go,
yeah,
you know what, it's been okay this whole time. I've been, you know, you expand things a little bit, you do something a little bit more. Like the other day I was walking around, I was out in Beverly Hills to go to a doctor's appointment, and I was walking up and down the street, and I stopped in to go, you know, get a smoothie or something. And I see people sitting outside with the patio dining. And it's like you have this feeling like, oh, it's kind of back to normal, right? And Bill, you know, thanks for coming back on. I just, you know, when I'm reading your column, the thing that got me was how careful you had been. And it was just like that one feeling of let's go do something that they say is okay. Let's go do something. Let's just drop our guard for a little bit. And, you know, I don't know. And one of the reasons I thought it was real brave of you to write this column is, you know, there's this stigma attached to the virus. Like people don't want to talk about it. Like they almost feel like there's like that no one wants to, once you get it, you're supposed to stay away from everyone. I'm a danger to everybody. But why did you decide to just, you know, to write it, first of all, to share something so personal, and get into just how hard this hit you?
Well, I'm the first person I know who has it. I don't know if you know anybody who has it. And so I thought to myself, God, we all think, let's be honest with us, a lot of us think nobody's ever going to get it. And then and the mm-hmm. many people have it, yet we don't know anybody who has it.
Yeah.
It's kind of always going to happen to somebody else. And I think I've been writing all summer, sports, no sports in 2021. And people have called me an alarmist. Or I've been writing, mm-hmm. you shouldn't play college football. Baseball's not going to work. You know, oh, just shut up. You're being a big baby. And I kind of wanted to say, well, this is kind of what,
yeah,
the reason I've been writing this and the reason that we have to pay attention to this. I talked to several scientists throughout the summer who said the only way sports works is in a bubble.
Yeah.
And the NBA's worked perfectly. Oh, my God. The MLS worked. NHL's working. The bubble's the only thing to work. And so I've basically been in a bubble, but just got outside of it for, you know, a couple hours one weekend night, and that's all it took. So I guess that's one of the people to know that it's out there and it's real, and just because we're numb to it doesn't mean it's not a real thing that has a real effects on people and can affect you moving forward. I mean, it's been 2 weeks and I'm still having cough and fits. And
wow.
I wonder when that's going to stop. And I'm a lucky one. I didn't go to the hospital. I didn't die. But there's people, you know, and I think it's always interesting to happen to somebody else. So I think the prism, if I was going to continue to write about this, in terms of the sports world, I had to kind of fess up and tell people that that I had it. And it was weird. It's been a great outpouring of sympathy and support and inspiration, and I appreciate that. I love L.A. for what they've done for me for this. But it's just, again, I'm lucky, I'm blessed, because my symptoms and everything, from what I understand, you know, again, I stayed out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There's always the fear that you're going to go in every night, every time you take your temperature. You close your eyes and say a prayer. Every time you put the oximeter on your finger that I had to buy.
Oh, man.
What oxygen level, you're holding your breath and saying, is this the time? Is this the one? It's crazy. It's just crazy. And that, I guess people don't realize, and I didn't realize, when you say there's no cure for it, that's what that means. It means you're screwed.
Like Tylenol doesn't work, cough syrup doesn't work, nothing.
No. You can take it if you want. He said, take. I said, can I take Tylenol? He said, well, if you want to. I said, what do you mean if you want to? He said, well, I mean, it's not going to stop it. It may alleviate your symptoms. You might want to try to mix up some Advil. I said, how many Advil should I take? He said, take 8. I said, 8? I said, are you kidding me? He said, well, that's, you asked me. He said, that's the only thing that's even going to have any effect on it. I said, I'm not taking 8 damn Advil. And no, I went through a whole bottle of cough syrup. That doesn't work. None of that stuff works. And so we're asking our young athletes in college football, in college sports, to go through this, unpaid athletes, and that's insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane that college football hasn't been totally canceled right now.
Mm.
To me, it's insane the NFL. I don't know how the NFL is going to do it. I just don't see how they're going to do it once they start hitting.
Yeah, Bill, I wanted to get your initial reaction when you first found out, whether it was through email, whether it was through the doctor, or you just had symptoms and you're like, I need to get checked out. Like, when you first found out, what was the initial reaction? Because I go back to my brother. He had it. And look, he lives in the Bay Area and I'm in Los Angeles. But still, just to get that phone call from him, like, hey, bro, I got COVID-19. And
wife
is expecting.
Brother,
yeah.
Let me ask you, Kirk, when your brother said he got it, how scared were you for him?
Well, I was really scared because not only they're newlyweds, they got married in February, right before COVID-19 really got rampant and got going. And then he's expecting a child as well. He's living in the home with his, you know, brand new wife, and you know, contracts COVID-19. Now, she tests negative, and it was great because obviously she's pregnant. But, you know, he's in the same house as her, and yet he gets it. She doesn't get it. And he had to – and you said you're in a house in which you're by yourself. They don't really have that luxury. So they quarantined in the same house where he was basically in a room for 2 weeks by himself and had to text his wife, who's in the room next to him, just to have a conversation. Or they would call each other.
I can't imagine that. Yeah, no, my family, it struck me. When the doctor called me, he was like stunned because he knew how safe I'd been. And I'd been tested before. I had a medical procedure several weeks ago, so I had to get tested before I went in for it. So I tested negative. So I'd been fine and everything had been fine. And he's like, Bill, you aren't going to believe this. You've got it. And I said, I don't believe it. And then but when I told my family, they started crying. They were it was like a death sentence. My younger brother called me crying. I'm saying, Bobby, I'm not dead yet. But that's how people look at it. That's the thing. It's only a statistic, and it's only something we can discuss and debate and talk about being, you know, political and all this until you get it. And then it's like everything changes. Everything. Your family is scared to death. Yeah. And so I was shocked when he told me I got it. I was just shocked. And then I got depressed. And that's another thing. You go through all these emotions, and I know it's the flu that's doing it. It must be. I'll just break out and start crying sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll start crying, or I'll fall asleep in my chair and have a dream that I'm being chased through a playground by an old lady with a giant head. I mean, I have crazy dreams. So it was like that. So I'm sure my family was like your family. Through my family, I realized how serious the fear is too, is that they're all crying and saying, oh my God, what are you going to do? We're coming down. I said, no, you can't come down. You can't come over. Nobody can come over. Oh my God, we're praying for you. I mean, it changes everything.
Yeah,
How you doing, Kirk?
What's up? How's he doing? He's doing fine now. He's, you know, he's recovered. He's starting to. He said, just feel like himself again, because that's the one thing that he told me is that where you still don't feel like your pre-COVID self. Like it's just an ongoing process of getting back, hopefully, to normal. So. But he just says, look, there's it was good days and there was bad days, and now he's saying there are more good days than bad days. So I'm praying for you, brother. I know you're going to pull through this thing, but one thing he just said, just understand it. It'll be done with soon. Like just let it run its course and it'll be all right.
Okay, good. It does go away. Good.
Yeah.
Bill, I'm so glad you're doing good. I'm so glad you shared your story.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, man. It must have.
Thanks for doing
it. I know. And I saw your thing, and like, I even just saw the tweet and my heart sank, you know, but I knew that the fact that you wrote it meant you were okay enough to write it.
That's a good point.
You know, I was like, okay. And, you know, I think it was good for me too, because, and for everybody. And that's why I hope you do more interviews. I hope you keep talking about it, because some of us, like you say, if you don't know anyone who's had it, if it's been 5-6 months, you just make these little decisions. And every day is an exercise in risk management. What risk am I going to take here? What risk am I going to take there? Am I going to put my mask on here, or am I going to go to an outdoor dining? You know, and every time I'm going to think about, you know, you saying how you went to that outdoor dining, like you just didn't put the mask on one time for something they said was safe.
With your baby, Momo, I'm sure you're scared to death, right?
Oh yeah, that's why I don't go anywhere.
You've got to change. You got to shut everything down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, people said, oh, you want to go to the bubble in Orlando?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, nope.
You're not going. You're not.
No,
going, are you?
No. Well, it's way too long to be away. But there's no way I get on a plane. You know,
no way
I get on a plane right now. You know, my aunt right now, she's sick and she's in the hospital for something else, and it's horrible because nobody can go see her. You can't. You all by yourself, and it's just it's. I can't imagine suffering through a disease like that all by yourself. I mean, that line you wrote about, you know, checking your pulse ox over and over and over and knowing, you know, is this going to be the one where it drops? You know, that's the, I mean, I feel like I wouldn't even be able to sleep. You know, you just, and I don't sleep.
I haven't slept. You don't sleep.
Yeah.
No,
I mean,
it's crazy. So it's real. No, I'm glad you're not going down there. I was worried you were going down there. Cause
no way.
I think people with families and young children and, you know, you got to take care of yourself, man. This is not just because it's going on for 3-4 months. It's not any less real. It's more real now than ever before.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thank you for coming on. I'm glad you're feeling better. I hope you keep feeling better. And next time it's 2 a.m. and you're sweating and you're freaking out, or you know, if you have any relapses, you call me. Okay, I'm up.
I'm not going to wake up that baby. No way.
No, you won't. He's in the other room. It's okay.
he better be in the other room. He's like one. He's like one and a half now.
Yeah, he's almost two. Almost two. Yeah, we got the monitor on. He's in his room now. He doesn't wake us up all night. That's good.
Good. I love that baby monitor. All right. All right, you guys are great. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. When we come back, wow, thanks. That was Bill's amazing to share all that and go through all that. And we're glad we had him on. I'm glad he's doing better. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Lakers. They finally have an opponent. They finally have an idea of who their opponent might be. And the NBA bubble has worked in ways that we like and ways that we maybe can do away with when we get back to normal. Kirk Morrison, Ramona Shelburne, in for Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I like the DJ today. That's good. That's good, Funch. Ramona Shelburne, Kirk Morrison here with you on a Friday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. You know, there's NBA games going on. I almost feel like I haven't recovered from last night yet. Like I'm still coming down off the Phoenix Suns game, the Portland game against the Nets that came down to the wire, all the intrigue back and forth. Of you know, Dame's got it. If Dame gets in here, then they go forward. If they lose this game, then Phoenix gets in, and the Lakers sitting in their room playing Madden, saying, I don't know if they care that much about who their opponent is, but the Trailblazers and the way that they have shown out in this tournament are a dangerous potential opponent if they can get by Memphis.
Yeah, but Ramona, look, I know Laker fans are out there, and they were watching last night. Because they know what's going on with Dame Lillard. Like, I think Laker fans, not as if they're scared and, oh my God, we may lose, we might lose, but they know that it's not going to be the cakewalk in the first round. With Dame Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers now in this play-in game versus Memphis, I think a lot of us are saying, the way the bubble is set up, I just don't see Dame Lillard losing two games in a row. So we're basically saying that the Lakers on Tuesday night, the primetime game, or the late game, we should say, the 9 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time, game one, it's going to be Lakers-Blazers, which we think. And it doesn't make it seem as if, oh, the Lakers can't win, but we just know that that series is not going to be comfortable. It's not a comfortable, like, oh, could they sweep? Could they win in 5 games? Like, I think that notion has went out the window just because of the play of Portland and what their personnel looks like, the matchups they can draw. And then also, too, a team that does have not necessarily championship pedigree, but they've been on the deep playoff run, like you've mentioned today, being there last year. Like, people forget they were in the Western Conference Final against the Warriors. Yes, it was the Warriors, but even still, though, they made it there. So they know how to play with fatigue. They know how to play with their back against the wall. I just know, look, I still got Lakers winning the thing, but, man, I think that it is some nervous Laker fans around there because they know it's not going to be an easy cakewalk.
Yeah, well, if you had the other thing, too, is when Portland's already been in the playoffs for the past 2 weeks. You know, they've had to be in that
When they walked into the bubble, yeah, it was a playoff.
From the jump. And they weren't really that good throughout the bubble. Like, they didn't – I didn't think that they looked all that great as a team. They got better as it went on. They just got a superhuman performance from Dame Lillard a couple of times. 51 points, 61 points, 42 last night. Just, you know – dagger three-pointers from the logo. They are a very dangerous team. I don't know how much they have left because they've expended so much energy already, and CJ McCollum is dealing with a lower back issue. I think it's a cracked vertebra in his lower back that Mark Spears, who we had on earlier in the show, said, you know, he's heard it described that CJ's in excruciating pain just playing, but he's trying not to show it. I don't know how long you can keep that up. But so far, Portland and Phoenix were the stories of the bubble. And I'm curious what you think, Kirk, on what from the bubble stays once we go back to regular NBA action. Okay, do you like the play-in game? Do we like this? Is it here to stay? This idea of, you know, a competition for the 8 seed.
I think. Yeah, I don't know. I think it just works with the format that they had this year. I don't know if a play-in game would be something that would work in an 82-game season, right? I don't know if that would have really worked, Ramona, but because of this little bubble that they have, I think it worked, right? Because it gave the final, you know, teams who weren't necessarily in the playoff driver's seat just yet, it gave them a lot to play for, and it was some exciting games because they were playing for seeding. They were playing to get in. I don't know if we would have had that same sort of excitement had this been an 82-game season. So will I leave that in the bubble? Yes, I will leave the playing game in the bubble. What I want to take from the bubble, Ramona, is, look, sports is about fans, fan interaction, okay? I would love to take that virtual video board. I thought that was the NBA nailed it with that, right? They knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
You know, having basically fans be able to, you know, have their picture up there. I mean, or they were actually.
It's live.
It's live, yeah. Their actual live video of themselves. I don't know where they put that at in terms of in an arena when hopefully the games go back to arenas for next season.
Yeah.
But Ramona, I'm taking that out of the bubble because I thought it made sure that, you know, I know people were fighting to get on. Like, man, put me on today. Like, just that kind of fan interaction, because you just never knew, especially the games that weren't necessarily the national TV games, just your, you know, your regular regional sports network. Like, people wanted to see themselves. And so I thought that was a huge, huge hit. And I know that other sports better be watching as well, because if you have a little space for a virtual board, it's for people who can't make it to all the games or can't be there in person. I thought that was a huge hit for the NBA.
Okay. How do we feel about Zoom press conferences? Okay. So this is Zoom press conference where you have a few reporters in person in the bubble right now asking questions, but they all have to be on Zoom as well. And a whole bunch of reporters outside the bubble calling in on their Zooms to ask questions compared to press conference in front of the mic. And sometimes you're in at a podium where there's not a lot of people around you, but there's like a whole, it feels like theater. How do we feel about Zoom press conferences versus regular playoff press conferences?
Yeah. Or the whole big giant scrum, right?
I
think, Ramona, I think players, if I'm a player, I would like the format that they have currently in the bubble. I think that it does give you time, and it makes sure this, Ramona, there's no follow-up questions, by the way. So I think with each reporter or person there or journalist who they're covering the game, you can only ask your best question, right? You don't have that opportunity to come back around. So I think personally, and I'm coming from my former player perspective, I like the Zoom kind of thing. And we saw it and we talked about it a little bit yesterday when we had Lindsay Theory on the program. That, you know, she had to ask the question to, Jalen Ramsey. We saw it on Hard Knocks. And she was just saying, hey, it's a fair question. And Jalen Ramsey was there and he was upset a little bit because she was asking and saying, but hey, just that's one question. You answer her question and you move on. I like this. I thought the players liked it as well. They answered their questions and they moved on. It wasn't nobody asking repeat questions. You ask you one good question and then you got to move on, which is a lot better than I've been in some of those scrums. And you got some guys who literally, and you've been there, Ramona, you got some guys who will block you out and want to go in there and have a one-on-one. No, this isn't one-on-one time, my brother. Everybody needs some sound. So move out of the way. Ask you one question. And I think the NBA players will love that. I don't know if the media will want to take this back.
I actually am going to go the other way. I like it. And I'll tell you why, all right? So I personally have, when I came into the business, we would go to a Laker practice or Clipper practice, and there would be like 5 or 10 people there. It was like the main newspapers and a couple of TV reporters, maybe somebody from the radio stations gathering sound. But you could, like, those kind of press conferences were, they felt normal. They felt like, or press scrums or whatever, you know, however it was. It wasn't like just a gigantic, like everybody and their mother and cousins and sisters and brothers, okay? Now, when I go to those press conferences, I find them useless. Like, I find it dehumanizing for the athlete, dehumanizing for the media that's there. It's almost like this rugby scrum where, I mean, I'm short. I'm 5'2", so, like, I got to go low, and I got to try to get to the front. And then I'm playing, like, you know, I'm trying to reach my microphone up close enough just to hear something, but I can't really connect with the person. Like, I feel like I'm just up at people's armpits. Like, it's just those are stupid. And there's too many I think it's you don't really get anything good out of those. I actually think Zoom is far better than those the scrum type interviews because you can get into something. It's more like being on the phone with somebody. So I like the Zoom press conferences. I hope one day we get back to some level of locker room access or one on ones that don't have to be 12 feet apart. But if I never have to stand in another giant scrum of media, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Bubble things?
I'm taking away. I didn't know if I was going to like it, Ramona, but I loved it.
Okay.
And what I did love was that the 3:30 Eastern tip and I messed that up. 6:30 p.m. Eastern, which is 3:30 Pacific, and 9 p.m. Eastern, which was 6 Pacific. Like, it allowed me time to watch a game in its entirety and be done about 8:30 Pacific time and then be able to watch some baseball and catch the last half of a game, right? Like, before the Laker game started at 7:30, but because it's a national TV game and then the earlier game runs over, that means it's a 7:48, 7:50 tip, and you're not, you know, finishing up a game until 10:30, 10:45 at night. I'm like, ugh. But you can watch it. You can stay up for it. I just like the way that the NBA did it. I think the ratings have proved that that's, you know, what people may have thought wouldn't have worked, but it works here on the West Coast, I believe. Having that 3:30, if you want to watch the earlier game, you can. But the 6 o'clock primetime game was one that everybody's going to watch, and we're done at 8:30, Ramona. I'm taking that back from the bubble. Bring it back to the regular season.
I like it. Good. All right. Yeah, we're getting some good stuff out of this. All right, coming up next, I feel like Steve Mason's going to be mad that he missed this interview, Linz. This is one of his favorite guys to have on and feud with. But Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register is going to come on. Dodgers and Angels in a freeway series coming up this weekend. Mookie versus Mike Trout. Is that the new LeBron Kawhi? Kirk Morrison, Ramona Shelburne, in for Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Ramona Shelburne, Kirk Morrison, in for Mason in Ireland. And our next guest, hey, Bill, guess what? You're going to get an easy Friday. This is like normally an interrogation for you. I don't even know why you agree to come on the show when Mason asks. And I sit back and let you guys insult each other. But today we're going to be nice to you, I think.
I figure I'm, you know, you went through the Rolodex and called every Bill who works at the Times and you ran out. And you called me.
Well, you actually were my first choice yesterday. But
you
then
don't have to lie to me, Ramona.
No, but then somebody better came along. No.
Exactly.
Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register joins us and covers the Dodgers, covers baseball, one of the great baseball writers in this town. And I think we finally got to see Mookie Betts yesterday. What got into him?
He's been pretty good for a while now. He kind of got a little bit of a slow start, like a lot of guys, because for 3 months he didn't pick up a bat, didn't see any live pitching, and that's not very easy to jump back into it. And he's been hitting well the last, I don't know, week and a half or so. And then last night was just, which is not unusual for him. He's done it 6 times in his career.
Oof, 3 home runs.
Yeah, he's up there, Bill, hitting home runs, things like that. But I know the Dodgers have been wanting to kind of tinker with the lineup a little bit, right? Obviously, look, Mookie has been consistent, but it's the Dodger fans want to know, is it best at batting him second in the lineup? Is it best at putting him in leadoff? Where is the best spot for Mookie Betts, especially when you're getting the type of production we got last night from him?
Well, see, the thing about batting leadoff is, and analytics show you, that it's not that different. You only bat leadoff really once to start the game, and then after that the lineup just turns over and you might be batting third in that inning or first in an inning or whatever. And it's just not that important, analytically speaking. What the analytics don't tell you is how the guy feels. Ooh. And I think Mookie Betts takes pride in batting leadoff. He sees himself as a leadoff hitter, whatever that is, in his brain. He thinks that's who he is, and that's where he's most comfortable. And he said that. He said it back in spring training, that that's his preferred spot, and he just feels comfortable there. That doesn't always show analytically, and they were worried about early in the season with, most teams' starting pitchers not going very deep, that they'd see a lot of matchups and a lot of that kind of thing. And if they went right, left down the lineup, they could minimize some of that or make it harder for the opposing manager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't working. There were just too many guys in the lineup who were getting off to a slow start. You have one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. Why not use him that way?
Yeah, I think I relate to that, actually, because you have a different mentality, different up and down the lineup. But when you have that leadoff mentality, it's almost like a point guard. Like you're either a pass first point guard or a scoring point guard. And it's like, if it gets you out of that mental zone, it kind of messes with you. What's Mookie like personally? I feel like we haven't really gotten a feel for him yet, just because we're all quarantined.
Idea. I hope to meet him.
You're socially distant. You're Zoom. I mean, we have Mike Trout and Mookie Betts in like one of the matchups of the great young players in baseball right now. Right squarely in their prime, and I don't really feel like I have any feel for the newest leading man in Dodger blue. Can you get any sense of him yet?
I mean, we really only had a few weeks because the trade was made right on the eve of spring training.
Yeah.
I was literally in Arizona already when the press conference was held. So we got a few weeks with him and then everything shut down. And the early impressions I had were he is very businesslike.
Okay.
He's not a guy to hang around the locker room playing ping pong. He was not a loud, chatty kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He came in, he did his business, he did it as well as he could, and he expects everybody around him to do that as well. And in that way, he fits in perfectly with this team. I mean, guys like Justin Turner and Clayton Kershaw set the tone.
Yep.
And Mookie comes in, and he doesn't set a different tone. He just reinforces it. He's the same kind of professional, go about your business, go out on the field and try and kick the other team as you know what. So he fits in really well there. I think we will get to know his personality a little bit, over the years. 12 years is, might be a long enough courtship that LA will get to know him a little bit. He's got a great smile, so when he's happy, you know it. You saw it a few times last night, and I think that smile is going to become very familiar and a real favorite among LA fans in the years ahead.
Bill, we got the Freeway Series this weekend, right? But it's more about the best players in baseball, right? In the American League, obviously Mike Trout. We don't need to even discuss anybody else after that. But you look at the National League, and to me, it's still Mookie Betts, one of the best players in the National League. So when we watch this Freeway Series, who kind of has the advantage? Who has the edge in terms of star power? Is it still Mike Trout because of where he's at? Or is it Mookie Betts at some point, maybe because he plays for the Dodgers, can he surpass what Mike Trout has kind of already built down there in Anaheim?
Well, we're going to have five former MVPs on the field tonight. Besides
Trout, that's a lot.
You got Bellinger, Pujols, and Kershaw. That's some star power right there, huh?
Yeah.
I think what you're going to find is, and this is true almost every sport, superstars are made in the postseason. You got to get in baseball, you got to get to October to get the, you know, the national attention. You can do everything you want in June and July and August, but the stage is biggest in October. And if you are the man in October, then that carries over. And to be brutally honest about it, Betts has a lot better chance of that than Trout does. I mean, they're just simply a much better team in L.A. than in Anaheim. And they're going to be, you would assume, perennial contenders for as long as he's in L.A. The Angels still have a lot of work to do in that category.
Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register is our guest, and I'm wondering, what do the Dodgers do with Dustin May when Alex Wood gets back? I mean, Dustin, he said he's supposed to throw the third game of this series, but Alex Wood throwing a bullpen tomorrow, do they have any, have they given you guys any read of what they do when Alex gets back?
That's like, I'm going to guess a week and a half to 2 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys don't tell you anything going on tomorrow, let alone 2 weeks from now. And, and during the Friedman era, nobody has been better about stretching the corners of a roster and turning 28 guys into 30 and to 31.
Yeah.
So I imagine that we'll see some maneuvering between now and then. Yeah, the rotation, and we knew this going into the season, is overstuffed. They have so many options. You know, Stripling has pitched well. May has been, you know, progressing and looking fantastic. Tony Gonsolin has made two starts without giving up a run. None of those guys were in the projected rotation coming into the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even when Wood comes back, I think you'll, you know, by then somebody else might have a little inflammation and need a little break. Maybe go on the IL. You know, there'll be some kind of maneuvering.
Look, Bill, we know about the Marlins and obviously the Phillies, Cardinals, but I feel like no one's giving enough credit to some of these California teams. Yes, we know California has been a hotbed with COVID-19, but yet the Dodgers have remained.
I'm going to knock on wood as you're saying this. Kirk, don't even say this out loud.
I'm just throwing it out there. Hey, I give bouquets when they're needed. I'm throwing them out there because even in a city like Los Angeles where there's a lot that guys can go out and get in some trouble or, you know, go out to the beach or do things like that, it seems like this is a team that understands what's going on. They understand the reality of COVID-19. And I think the Dodgers are doing a great job. And so from what you've seen, Bill, so far, from like just an older team or a team that really just on a mission?
They're a team that has some good leadership. And I think that is going to be even more valuable this year than normal. You know, guys in the clubhouse who will tell the younger players, you know, knock it off. You're going to screw it up for all of them. And, you know, and speak very frankly to guys if there's any sense that people are starting to get lax on these things. You're right. They deserve credit. Not only, you know, I mean, they had three guys who had COVID-19 before they ever got to summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
Kenley Jansen, A.J. Pollock, and Scott Alexander.
Right.
So, you know, they've had their issues with it. But since the season started, they've been fine as far as we can tell. They went on a 9-game road trip that went to Houston and Phoenix at a time when both of those places were hot spots for coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
And knock on wood, like you said, they haven't had any repercussions from that. I do think there was a concerted effort around Major League Baseball, kind of prodded by the Players Union after Manfred made some noises about, you know, shutting the season down if we can't get this under control. I do think there was a concerted effort around the league, Dodgers in particular, to reinforce the need for these protocols, the need to take this all very seriously. And they, you know, they seem to be doing that.
Bill, what are the, there's a bunch of new things going on in baseball, new rules, you know, starting the runner at second, and the, you know, the relievers have to stay in for a certain number of batters. Like, what are guys like, and what do they hate so far?
I don't think there's a whole groundswell of support for the put a runner on second base thing. I'll tell you some of the younger guys did it in the minor leagues last year.
Uh-huh.
And there seems to be a feeling that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And it just kind of junks up the game. And the idea is that it speeds things up and gets the extra innings over. Well, their feeling is it's awful easy to score a run when you start with a guy on second base. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, one team scores, the other team scores.
Yeah.
And next inning they don't score. And then the next inning they both score again. You know, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't shorten the game. So I don't see that that's, I don't think there's a whole lot of support for that one. I think we're seeing the DH in both leagues, and I think that will continue.
Mm.
I think the next collective bargaining agreement will kind of solidify that. I think most guys, non-pitchers, most guys like it.
Yeah.
They like having that extra bat to line up. They like having mm-hmm. that half day off where all you got to do is hit, you know, those kind of things. The three batter minimum, I think, is kind of, the jury's still out on that one. I don't know that that's doing a whole lot of good to speed up the game either. We're still mm-hmm. seeing a whole bunch of pitching changes that slow things down. So I think the jury's still out on that one.
Well, I think obviously the biggest change this year is the cardboard cutouts as fans and socially distant everything. Is it weird being at the ballpark? I mean, like, does it feel like a game when you're there?
No, it's very, very weird. And
yeah.
You know, we don't even sit in the press box at Dodger Stadium.
Oh,
we're at a
hard
table at the back of back of the loge level.
Oh,
very strange. The press box is taken over by all the people making that fake fan noise that you hear and that stuff. They have a press box now.
Okay.
So you walk into an empty stadium. You walk to an empty, you know, loge level. You sit down at these weird little tables. And then you hook up to Zoom and interview the manager. It's all very strange. I think somebody you had on from the bubble said that the bubble is kind of like an extended NBA summer league.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. That's what these things feel like, too. They don't feel like a real season, a real game.
Hmm. Well, it's going to count the same. If we finish.
Very true.
Yeah. Hey, well, I better let you go get covering your game with no crowd noise. I know Dodgers and Angels coming up pretty soon. Bill, thanks for joining us.
You got it, guys.
Yeah, I hope we were nicer to you than Mace, right? Do I need to find some kind of insult before you go, or do you need that in your life?
No, I'm good. I get enough of that anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure Mace is saving them up. Thanks. All right. Coming up when we come back, the number one high school football player in the country had a very important decision to make, and I'm not sure if it is the right one and if it's going to turn out the way he thinks. Kirk Morrison, Ramona Shelburne, in for Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Where did he be at when they said they're doing all this and all that? Tired of beefing you bums, you can't even pay.
See, I like to let the music roll a little bit. When you play a good song like this, I let it roll a little bit. Let the people enjoy it. I'm not a DJ, but Funch is doing a good job. Kirk, we're almost done. Can you believe this, right? It's almost 6 o'clock already. Michael Thompson's coming up at the top of the hour.
That's that new Drake, Ramon. I'm vibing right now.
I can't see Kevin Durant in the video, but
Kevin Durant, Odell Beckham Jr., who else? Marshawn Lynch. It was a nice little video last night that dropped midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. on the West Coast. I'm a big Drake fan, too, so it's
Did you guys see how he impersonated LeBron's draft night with the White House?
No.
Oh, I got to send it to you, Ramon.
Tweet that out.
Yeah, it's a picture of he actually had LeBron's actual draft suit per se, because LeBron had the vest and the tie on, but it was kind of a throwback to the suit and just how big, ridiculously big the suit was that LeBron was wearing. So, but a lot of people have said that Drake looks like Noah Van Vliet. I'm sorry, Fred. Fred Van Vliet.
Okay, wait, hold on. Pause.
If you look
let's all try to say Fred Van Vliet three times fast.
Fred Van Vliet.
You gotta do it really fast. I had him. I had the NBA Finals last year, and I was doing radio where I had to interview him after a couple of games, and I just gave up. Because you're live on the air and you got to do that sideline interview right after the game. And it's live on radio and then recorded with a TV camera there. And I'm like, we're here with Fred Van Vliet. Nope. We're here. Hey, Fred, tell me about the game.
I've actually heard broadcasters, when they say his name, they really stress the Vliet. Vliet.
Yeah.
You got to say it. Because I would say Fleet in a minute, but it's Fred Van Vliet.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to really dig in on that name, okay?
Yes.
And there's certain names you got to be careful with, but his is one that it's just the V and the L. Like if you say him fast, you'll mix them up. But those sideline interviews, let me tell you, I am not a natural at those. That takes a lot of some work. I'm a much more conversational interviewer. Like I'm good on the phone. I'm good in person when we do these interviews. It's a little awkward when you do these three questions. And I mean, there's been times I had one time last year, I was talking to PJ Tucker from the Rockets. We had one of his games and I had my couple of questions kind of in my head of what I was going to ask. And I started talking and it was just your mind goes blank and you're like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to ask. Like it was mid sentence. You're like, PJ, in the middle of the fourth quarter, you guys were up. And then they came back and you're like, oh, what was that question that I had kind of scripted out? And you just mind blank, stuttering, stammering. Oh, my goodness. And PJ, thank goodness that happened with a guy who could pick up on what was rolling here and jumped in and saved me.
And just jump in and go with
it. Oh, my goodness. God, those are tough because you got to be fast, articulate. Get straight to the point. Radio, they don't want you to mess around. They don't want you to give a whole exposition. They just go, what happened in the fourth quarter when you guys got down 10 and came back? They just real quick, right? Those sidelines. Hey, there's a story out of Ohio. And, as we talk about college football, we talk about the NFL and how they're getting through this. High school football is county to county, city to city, state to state. I know Jake Garcia, who's the number one recruit going to USC, was supposed to go to USC, has transferred from his high school in California to Valdosta, Georgia. Now, Jack Sawyer, who's the number one recruit in the country, a defensive end who's committed to Ohio State, he just decided, I'm going to skip the rest of my senior season altogether and go straight to Ohio State. But Ohio State is not playing football this year at all. And there's not classes, so what is he doing?
I think he's just going to start training, just getting ready now. Mm. I mean, think about it. Kids are doing what? Virtual learning. So he's not going to school. He is not going to be playing football currently. And then why waste your body on, actually playing a football game or football in the spring? So what kids may do, might as well just graduate early, wow. Ramona. Think about it. We've seen how many guys who, do 3.5 years of high school and just start their college right away. I don't know if I would have wanted to do that, Ramona, but I just think it's now such a big trend because the second semester of your senior year in high school It's kind of like a breeze, like really, like yeah. especially.
I remember that. I didn't do much.
Yeah, you didn't do like yeah. anything. Yeah. Like the only thing mm-hmm. that you were just waiting for was like the you know the big senior prom, maybe the senior trip, things that you can actually probably still, I believe, go on even if you were enrolled in wow. college. So I think I probably would have, just the way that things are going right now, Ramona, yeah. if you're a high school player, if you don't have any offers, then yes, you will probably go out and transfer or go somewhere else. But for the most part, I would reclassify, or not reclassify, I would just graduate, get all my credits, and start my college career or college football career a little bit early. Mm. Why not get acclimated to college, even though it's still the same thing? You're still going to be virtual learning, but you, at least you get to start your scholarship early, hopefully, and yeah. Start doing, you know, living in the dorms, whatever it may be.
I don't even know that you live in the dorms.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, I think football players are still living in the dorms, I believe. I don't know if they are or not. Yeah, I don't know what's hotels. Going on.
Man, yeah. I feel so sorry for high school seniors last year, this year, because so many of the things that we all got to experience was prom night, grad night,
oh, man,
all yes. that fun stuff that you do your senior year. You know, I mean, I was a good student. I was kind of a goody two shoes, but my last semester, I ditched several times. Like we did all kinds of fun stuff like that senior year.
And the hay was like, already in the barn, Mo. That's a good
yeah, idea. And then I almost got in trouble. I know. I had already gotten to Stanford. I was like, oh, I can do whatever. And I remember them trying to get me to care about my physics test, and I was like, come on now. It's like seriously? June yeah. 4th. I'm graduating next week. I don't
regardless
know.
Of how I do on this test.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Kirk, this has been fun this week, but you know what's always fun?
What's that?
Michael Thompson. Like,
oh, does he have his intro music?
Well, where's the Michael Thompson his intro music? We're going to come back with it. Kirk Morrison, Ramona Shelburne, in for Mason Ireland. Michael Thompson up next, 710 ESPN. There it is.
There's
the music. MT, I gotta hype you up, Michael Thompson. Are you doing your walk-in? Are you pounding your chest on your walk-in?
Oh yeah, that power walk like Steve Stone Cold Steve Austin always.
I got you in on an off day. We gotta at least get you some hype music. What are you doing on your off day, Michael?
Just dreaming about Stone Cold Steve Austin putting the stunner on Kirk Morrison. I think he's going to do that one time.
Well, Lindsay's. You were like my first. You know, when you host, you always say you tell the producer kind of who you want to have on, who your favorites, and like MT was the top of my list. I had to sign you up, and then I realized I'm asking him to come in on his off days, so I feel kind of bad about that. But we at least have a game for you, so you don't have to do much work. Lindsay's going to do all the work.
Exactly.
There you go. What do you got, Lindsay? What do you got?
Well, I was thinking, if you guys want to play the game now or you want to play it next segment, since we've got Michael for two.
Oh, okay.
To you guys, though.
Oh, well, then I thought you needed time.
I was thinking, if you want to talk a little Lakers first.
Yeah. Well, we've been.
That's why I was saying it, you know, when we.
I got you. Okay. Got so, Mike, when you called that last game and the Lakers put their really uninspiring 3-5 record in the bubble in the books, did you watch the rest of the games that day? Did you catch Dame Lillard? Did you catch Devin Booker? Did you catch those teams that were fighting for that 8 spot?
Well, the main game I was watching, guys, was the Portland game, Portland and Brooklyn, and that came down, of course, to the last shot. And so, because I've been predicting since this bubble started that Portland was going to eventually be the 8 seed once they got, because they got everybody back now. Damian's taking this game to another level, Steph Curry-like level. So I always thought that Portland would be the team that the Lakers would be facing. So I definitely wanted to see that one. And boy, my prediction almost did not come true. Caris LeVert thought Kevin Durant there, taking that fadeaway jump. Just gone to the basket. I don't know why he thought he could make a jump shot from out there.
Mike, that was that. You know what was getting me about that one, too? He was driving to the hoop every time. And on the last play where he had the clear out, he had a shorter defender on him. I think CJ was on him, right?
CJ McCollum, yeah.
Yeah, McCollum was on him. Karras has got 3 inches on CJ. Just drive to the hoop and get fouled if you don't have a shot. I mean, the one time to not get aggressive is the one where he does the pull up step back.
Yeah, the win meant or the lock meant them to Brooklyn. That locked him to their seed, so that didn't mean anything to him. But I guess he just wanted to end it on a jump shot. But you're right, he was going to the basket at will and scoring.
Yeah.
I think he would try to finish the game with his strong part of his game, because the strong part of his game is not jump shooting. But anyway, it's going to be Portland, fellas, and lady. And I tell you one thing, this is going to be one tough series. I know we still got the play-in game.
Mm-hmm.
So Portland's going to take care of Memphis tomorrow. I don't have any doubts about that. But this is going to be one long, tough series, because it's on neutral court. It's not in Staples Center, not up there in Portland. So since it's on a neutral court, that eliminates that home court advantage the Lakers would have. And just reminds me, Kirk Morris, have you ever heard of a group called Pink Floyd?
Yes, I've heard of Pink Floyd.
Well, very good, very good. You got some cultural awareness there. So it reminds me of that great song of Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Every time I hear that song, I wish the guys were here in L.A. opening up the series against the Blazers next week.
Well, Portland has that advantage too.
I am literally.
What's that lens?
Literally, what?
Oh, go ahead.
All right.
I was just going to tell you guys that I was literally wearing a Pink Floyd T-shirt right now.
Oh wow!
There you go. All
right. MT, man, I got Laker fans texting me, man. They're texting me. They're calling me. Messaging me. They're not as if they're going to lose a series to the Portland Trail Blazers, but they're a little nervous. And I think they're nervous because without Avery Bradley, who is a guy who you can probably throw on a lot of these wing and point and guards in the NBA, without him, who do the Lakers throw at Dame Lillard if that series does come to fruition?
Nobody can guard him. They'll try. They'll throw Caruso, Pope, Quinn Cook, they'll throw Waiters at him. Where's the Waiters when you need him, right? But everybody, mm-hmm. But nobody's going to stop Dame now. He's not on another level, playing in another zone, pulling up from 40 feet, knocking down three. So you got to concede 30 points to him. He's going to average that. But the problem with this series coming up is you can't let him and CJ McCollum get off and say combine for 60 points or more. Because if they do that, if they average 60 points as a backcourt combination, it's going to be a long, tough series. So the Lakers have to try their best to contain these guys in the 40s, in the high 40s, and not let them get in the 60-point area.
You know, Mike, the one thing I think the Lakers have going for them in this, though, is Portland's advantage is usually the three bigs with Nurkic and Zach Collins and Whiteside this year. But that doesn't really mean much against the Lakers with Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. Are the Lakers concerned about any of those matchups at all?
Yeah, they should. That boys can play, man. You know, Whiteside and Nurkic are big physical guys. Whiteside can put up points and rebounds. You know, he's a free agent, so, you know, he's motivated to play well for another contract.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, forgot that.
Collins is a nice young player. So the Laker front line is going to be challenged in this series. The Lakers are legit. Don't let their sub-500 record fool you. They were injured all year long, but now we've seen that the real Blazers team is like, and this is going to be a tough series, so the Lakers got to be ready. They're playing the AC, but they're playing like a team, like Charles Barkley said, more like a 3C.
MT, what was the biggest positive out of the bubble for the Lakers, right? I mean, obviously everybody, they won the number one seed, but what's the big positive that people aren't talking enough about with the Lakers?
They're going into the playoffs healthy. That's all that matters. We knew they were going to clinch the number one seed. They rediscovered their shooting touch after about a three-game slump. So we knew that was going to bounce back. But the main thing is going to go into these playoffs. Everybody's healthy.
Yeah, everybody's healthy. I think Anthony Davis, a couple early on, it looked like he had some dead legs, especially against Indiana. Does he get better there? Is he rounded into shape?
Oh, yeah. Anthony, don't worry about him, man. You remember what he did to the Warriors a couple of years ago when he averaged like 40 points a game against those guys? Even though he got swept, he was killing the Warriors. He's capable of putting up those. The Blazers got nobody who's gonna deal with him. If they go big and try to put Whiteside on him, AD's too quick for him. So AD is going to be a problem for every series that the Lakers play. No team has anybody who can deal with AD.
Mm.
Lakers aren't in cruise control, though, Mike. Look, they're not going to be in cruise control to where they can kind of, you know, lose a game here or there. Like, I'm really nervous for the Lakers because they may show more than they may want to, but they also, in this bubble scenario, can be pushed a lot more than they probably would have wanted to be pushed in this first round, Mike. So if you're the Lakers and you play a seven-game series, Like, what could that do to Bron and these guys? Because I feel like the rust has been knocked off, but they're still not to where they were back when we saw them back in March.
They're all right. I think they're fine. They're going to play well. They look good in the last couple of games, shooting the ball well. Shooting was the only thing I was concerned about. AD, you know, these guys sort of shut it down. After they clinched the number one seed, Ramon, they sort of shut it down and just put it in cruise control, waiting for next week, so to speak. So I'm not too concerned about anything that's related to the Lakers right now. We'll find out on Tuesday night. We'll see how they come out, because we know Dame Lillard has everybody's attention, and you know LeBron and the boys are going to be ready to deal with him.
Michael, I'm wondering how this schedule, like, there's no travel, so that doesn't take a lot out of your body, but playing every other day, starting on Tuesday, they go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, then they go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Like, what kind of grind is that going to be throughout these playoffs?
Man, that's nothing. These guys can handle it. These guys are super human. Remember Kirk Morris?
Yeah.
The active NFL player. Guys like Kirk Morris and these guys, they're not normal human beings, man. These guys are super athletes, super humans. They can recover. Their bodies are conditioned for this. They don't, like you said, they don't have to jump on planes and travel. They go right back to their rooms, get something to eat, and get in the sauna and relax. So playing every other day, their bodies are built for this.
Mm. MT, we've been talking about all these bubble teams and bubble guys, but what's up with Clay and Steph? I know they had a little bit of FOMO, the fear of missing out, playing in the bubble. Everyone's talking about them. We're forgetting all about the Warriors. I know Draymond had his thoughts when he was on TNT, but like, how are a team like the Warriors, especially Clay and those guys, like how are they handling it not being in the bubble?
Oh, they miss it. They wish they could be in the action. Clay's talking about the games and watching it just like everybody else. He's a fan of the game, fan of all of his peers and stuff. So, but they know that they're going to be back with a vengeance next year. As long as they have good health, they'll be right in the mix. They'll be one of the top five teams in the league next year, or at least one of the top six. We all know who the top four are, in Milwaukee, Toronto, the Lakers, and Clippers. Then you can throw in Denver and the Warriors with Clay and everybody back, and the number one pick or possibly a high pick. Then they got some free agency moves they can make. They're going to be right back in the thick of things next year. They might not be the favorites to win it like they were with KD, but they'll be a serious playoff contender again.
Well, MT, it's interesting to think about the Warriors being out of it this year, because they were just so mentally and physically exhausted at the end of last year that I think they needed a break. Like, it was even though you're excited about going to the new stadium, you're excited about going to the new, you know, having a new season. It just, sometimes when you have that long run, like, you need a break. Well, this is, they potentially won't play basketball for 9 months. Like, from the time they stopped to the time December comes around, that's March 11th to like the beginning of December. What does that layoff do to you? And then Clay obviously is even longer, because he wouldn't have played since the last finals.
They're going to be refreshed after a long layoff like this, no question about it. They'll be hungry and realize how much they miss their profession, how much they miss playing. But I don't want to hear this crap about how drained they were. The Celtics went to 8 straight finals with Bill Russell's days, playing with flip-flops and having to travel by train. Come on, in the snow. So don't give me these guys. They extended out the series, the schedule, so they can get more rest. These guys fly charter. They have personal chefs cook for them. Don't give me this. They have a cushy lifestyle. If you go to 5 straight finals, so what? Get your rest between games. Like me and Kirk used to go home after games and rest.
I like it. MC, are you going to stick around for another segment? And Lindsay's got a game for us. We're going to just mess around.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, sounds good. I know you're very. You came in the other day when we were playing a game. He missed the first three questions of the game, even, and still came back and beat everyone. I don't know, Kirk. I don't know if we have much of a chance. All right.
I'm so good at games. They banned me off of Jeopardy.
Oh, not sure if that's true, but I'll roll with you there, MT. All right, Kirk Morris and Ramona Shelburne in for Mason Ireland. We come back. Michael Thompson shows us all how to play games. 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Woo, woo! Ramona Shelburne, Kirk Morrison, and Michael Thompson in for Mason Ireland today. And we're going to, it's Friday. I mean, everybody's driving home. You know, the best part about all this is there's no traffic, so you don't have to sit in traffic for an hour and a half getting home. But we're talking you home on your Friday afternoon. And Lindsay, you've got a game for us all to play here?
I do. This game...
Sounds like you've been working on this for a while.
Well, I mean, it's just, there's not a whole lot to it, but I feel like the explanation is warrants like an extra minute or two of time.
Okay.
Just to make sure everyone's on the
same page. Everybody pay attention. All right.
So we'll play the Game of Games music, even though this is not going to count as towards any of our Game of Games scores.
If Michael wins, then this would be Michael's second win in the Game of Games, which is...
Sure, but I'm going to be dividing you guys into teams, so it'll be team efforts. All right.
All right.
So here's what... The game is called You Bet. I took it from the Ellen Show. They call it Bet Your Life. But no wives here, so we'll just call it You Bet. I'm going to divide you guys into two teams.
Okay.
And we'll do... Ramona, you're going to be on team with Michael.
All right.
And then Kirk and Funch will be on a team.
All right.
Okay, Funch. Let's go, Funch.
Michael, I'm a point guard. I'm going to throw you the ball. You shoot, okay?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you guys categories, and you're going to take turns betting how many answers you think your partner will be able to give in 30 seconds.
Okay.
So, for example, I give you a category, brands of gum, and we'll say the first group that's going to guess the answers is going to be Ramona from her team and Funch from his team. All right. So, Michael, you're going to have to tell me how many brands of gum do you think Ramona can name in 30 seconds?
Okay.
And then
now
you'll pick.
Yeah.
We'll just do this as an example. Let's say you say five. And then, Kirk, if you think that Funch is going to be able to name more than that, then you guys keep going back and forth until you think the other person, you want to challenge them. So when you think that that number is high, you're going to say, I challenge that. You got to try and name them. Make sense?
Okay.
Got it.
Makes sense. I got it.
All right.
All right. So what's our first one?
Okay. So our first category is going to be brands of shampoo. All right.
Okay.
So, Michael, how many brands of shampoo do you think that Ramona can name in 30 seconds?
Five.
All right. Kirk, how many can Funch name?
I think Funch can name seven.
Okay. Michael, do you think Ramona can name more than that? Eight, nine, ten?
No, I wouldn't bet that. That's not in 30 seconds.
All right, so we're going to challenge that then. Funch has got to name seven brands.
Come on, Funch.
Of shampoo.
Let's go. You ready?
In 30 seconds. And if he can't, then the point goes to the other team. All right?
Let's go, Funch. You ready?
So
come on, man.
Let's start the clock.
I got my faith in you. All right, ready?
All right, start the clock. Go.
Head and Shoulders, Pantene,
come on, Funch.
Paul Mitchell, Paul Mitchell.
There you go. Okay.
Oh man. Leona the Gun. Damn, dude. VO5.
VO5. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
All right, so Funch got four, which means the point goes to Ramona and Michael. You guys get the point.
He ain't got no hair. He don't use shampoo.
Dude.
Yeah, I do.
You should have got the one that was like the Garnier one. That's the one where
they're
in the shower and they're like having a good time. You know that one? Yeah.
All right, that's a good one. What we're going to do is the first
shampoo. We just use soap.
That's true.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
The first team to get 3 points is going to win. So the next one here, it's going to be Michael guessing versus Kirk.
Okay.
So
Ramona says how many. All right.
The category is going to be breeds of dogs. Ramona, how many can Michael get?
I think Michael can get six.
All right. Funch, how many can Kirk get?
I'll say seven.
Okay. Ramona, do you think Michael can get eight, nine?
Yeah, Michael can get eight. He's good.
All right, Funch. You want to challenge him, or you think he can do nine?
We'll challenge him.
All right,
this is an easy one, Michael. Michael's got this. Clay's got a dog.
You got to get what was it? You had
eight
breeds
dogs
of dogs.
I have faith in you.
Seconds. Let's start the clock.
Okay, bulldog, Doberman, Rottweiler, Labrador, poodle, German Shepherd, let's see, Cocker Spaniel, Shih Tzu. it is.
Yeah, true. That's eight. You got eight.
That's eight. All right.
Yeah.
That was easy enough, right? That one was a little
bit. I don't know why I laughed about that. I thought for sure he was going to say Great Dane.
Yeah.
All right. Momo's got 2 points.
Woo!
And Michael had 2 points.
I knew it.
Man.
Michael's good.
Yeah.
All right. So the next category, this one is going to, we're going to go back to, Michael is going to have to predict how many Ramona could get as far as celebrities with three names. Celebrities with three names can Ramona name?
I'm going to go four, no more than four. Because, you know, my four celebrities, four.
Okay.
All right. So what do you think? How many can Funch get, Kirk?
I think Funch can go five.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So you want to challenge him, Michael, or do you think that Ramona can get six?
No, I don't think six is too much because, you know, you got to.
I think I might be able to. I might be able to be good. I don't know.
Right, let's do it then. I'll say Ramona. Let's challenge him.
All right.
Okay, right. Oh, you want to challenge me?
Well,
all right,
if you're
going to
challenge him, then that means Funch has got to get five.
Funch, you got five in you, brother.
It's not as hard as you think. Once you start rolling, it's not as hard as you think.
Five, right, Funch. I know you got five in you. Come on,
Funch. Here we go.
All right, Tommy Lee Jones, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, there we go. Home Improvement.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
That's cheating.
I'll let one slide.
One more.
Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, you got it.
Okay, wait. I need to object because there was a cheat. There was a hint there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How about if I get the same 30 seconds? Can I name more?
No, that's not how it works.
There was a hint in there. Oh, yeah, man. How'd you not get Julie Louis Dreyfus? All right. Paul Gosselier.
Okay, yeah, Billy Ray Cyrus.
I know. I'm thinking of it, too.
It's not as hard as you think.
Next one
we've got, we're going to do the category will be Tom Hanks movies. So the person guessing for this one is Michael. Ramona, how many Tom Hanks movies can Michael name?
I'm going to say three.
Okay. How many can Kirk name?
Kirk can do six.
Oh, six. Wow, that's a big one. Can I do seven?
No, we're going to let Kirk do six.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Here we go. Tom Hanks movies. Start clock.
Okay. Philadelphia, Big, Forrest Gump. I'm stuck there. Those three. Oh. Come on, Funch. Why you do this to me? Who else? Tom Hanks movies.
You only got three.
No, that's not a few good men. That's
You got horrible.
Terrible.
I'm stuck, man.
Wilson! Wilson!
Toy Story.
You put him at six?
Saving Private Ryan.
Oh.
Big.
All right. There's so many of them.
He said Big. He said Big.
I got Big. I got Philadelphia. I got Forrest Gump, but how did I forget Castaway?
Mr. Rogers. How about Mr. Rogers?
Oh,
he just was in that.
Recent one, too. Just was in
Toy
that
Story.
One.
I mean.
So now Michael is going to be on the spot now. And if you get this, you guys win.
All right.
No, I think it's the other way. Michael has to say how many I can name.
You're right.
Michael, it's not that I didn't have faith in you. He just put that number up there so high, I figured. Let's let him prove it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
that was strategy.
Make it fun and let Michael be the guesser.
Okay, Michael can be the guesser. I'll do that again.
Okay. So then the category is going to be names for the word butt.
What?
Name, like alternate words, like for the word butt.
Mm.
Oh, alternate words for the word butt.
Yeah, names. Alternate words.
I was like, excuse me?
How many can Michael name?
Well, there's several different ways we can answer that question. So I'm going to say Michael can do four.
Four. Okay. And what about Funch? How many can Funch do, Kirk?
I can say five.
Okay. Can Michael name six, Ramona?
Yeah, he can do six.
Six, maybe
I'm challenging
seven?
That six. I'm challenging that six.
All right.
You don't need to do seven. I'm challenging MT.
If you get six, you guys win, Michael.
Come on, Michael. You can do this. It's easy.
Start the clock. Words, alternative words for butt.
Are we going?
Yeah, it's you.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. You ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Ass, booty, kista, bungi, derriere, junk.
Oh, man, that was very, very quick. Yes, man. Yes, man.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. God. I thought he was going to go hiney, derriere.
He did say derriere, right?
He got derriere. Wow. Like,
booty's a classic.
Michael just rapped it, too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Michael, I don't even need to ask. I don't even need to ask your age at all. I don't want to ask your age at all, Michael. But when you said keister, I mean, that ain't nobody using keister, man.
Keister? Yeah, man. People say that.
That's what, like I said, you using keister. I don't know if I can say that in my group chat. Like, man, sit your keister down. Like, I don't know if that works.
Don't they still say that in the rap songs?
I don't think so. No,
not in the WAP video. They're not using that one in the keister. No, sorry.
All right. So, do you guys think that was a good game? Like,
that was a good game.
Keep in the bank.
That was a good game.
Well, yeah, keep it in the bank because there was some strategy there. Because sometimes you're playing your opponent, and I know like Michael can probably get it, but if I set it pretty high, I know that Kirk is like all aggressive, and he's gonna set it. He's not gonna let it slide. Like, so he'll just make Funches have to name seven, and it's too high. Yeah, so there's a little strategy to it too.
Yeah,
because I'm going off myself. So I'm thinking like, oh, I can name seven, but can Funch name seven?
See, it's hard. It's harder to name when you have to come up with it yourself rather than you recognize it. But
I should have known. Hey, me and Funch, we keep it low and tight in terms of our haircut. So yeah, we ain't using a lot of shampoos.
Yeah,
little Head and Shoulders is all we need.
That's all.
I have to commend producer Lindsay though, because setting Michael Thompson up for that last question was a dangerous thing to do. I mean, I was not sure what was going to come out of your mouth, Michael.
We had to give him a chance to guess, you know?
Hey, all those words are now said on television, so everything's the only word you cannot say on TV these days is the F word. Everything else is a fair game.
Like keister.
Yeah. Actually, Michael Thompson can say so many more words than you and I can. All right, Kirk, this has been fun. MT, thanks for hanging out. We'll catch you on Tuesday, Michael, when the Lakers open up against either the Grizzlies or the Trailblazers. Round one.
It'll be the Blazers.
All right, thanks, everybody. Enjoy your Friday. Angels, Dodgers coming up next, 710 ESPN.